The plan for today is to speak a little bit about Rav Huttner, his influences and impact. We are in Kayetzman going to be speaking about the letters of Rav Huttner. We spoke last week part one of a Hakdama. We spoke last week about Rav Huttner on Rebbe Talmud relationships and the way in which Rav Huttner perceived Talmidim are supposed to relate to their Rebbeim, and in a certain sense that provides a background for giving us some insight into what exactly Rav Huttner was trying to give over to his students. What we're going to speak about today is a little bit about the life of Rav Huttner. To understand, a lot of his letters are related, they're written from different places, as we'll speak about in a little bit, and to understand who exactly he was and his thought, what exactly, who it's impacted by and what made him unique and why his impact is actually important. In that sense, it's not as much of a standard shiur as far as going through some of the letters and putting some of the content together. It does provide a bit more of a background and elements of it will not be, we're not going to speak that much about his biography per se, but elements of it are going to relate to part of his biography in order to better understand who exactly Rav Huttner was. As a hakdama to all of this, I want to just begin with two letters of Rav Huttner. These letters of Rav Huttner are very important for the way that he perceived it is important to speak about great people, and I think that they we have to keep them in mind as we go through our own learning of it. Source number two, Igor Suksavim, Simon Kuf Chav Ches. This is a very famous letter and one that we'll speak about probably in a different week on its own. But he writes as follows: Rachol he gets lenu shekasher misaskim anu betzadli hashleim mashag delenu. He says it's a terrible sickness that when we speak about the different sides of some of our leaders, of some of our great people, we tend to speak about the result, the end conclusion of the levels that they reached. We tend to speak a lot about the end result, what they attained, who they became, and their greatness. And we tend to speak less, says Rav Huttner, about the struggle and what led them to that point. He writes, as an example, we speak about we tend to speak about these people as if they were born perfect, as if they were born elevated. As an example, we speak about how the level the Chavetz Chaim reached as far as the way that he communicated, the way that he spoke without Lashon Hara or anything like that. But who knows about the struggles that the Chavetz Chaim went through? Who knows about the ups and downs, about all of the falls that he must have had in trying to become the Chavetz Chaim? This gets quoted often in a critique of Gedolim books. When people speak about certain works and how they describe figures, their end result, they were always perfect. The way that you have with some, you speak about how Reb Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin, they say that when he would nurse from his mother, it was on the Madrega that he would make a bracha before doing so at the age of six. Some of those stories are not always as inspiring. And Rav Huttner says when we speak about only stories like that, and we speak about great people, as if that's all that they were, they were born the way that, you know, some nolad mahol, as if they were perfect from birth, we're getting an inappropriate and incorrect description of who they really were. And we have to understand that we're dealing with people who really did evolve a lot and struggled a lot. I believe they say it's one of the reasons why there is no article or biography on Rav Huttner. The best thing that we do have on Rav Huttner, and there was a Sefer HaZikaron put out. Rav Huttner's daughter, Rebetzin David, who is the head of BJJ, has a PhD from Columbia in Jewish history. She is, again, it relates, we'll speak a little bit about Rav Huttner being out of the box. So she wrote a bit of a biography there in Sefer HaZikaron on the life of Rav Huttner. But as a whole, we don't have any of those kind of standard biographies. Rav Huttner was not someone, he was someone that critiqued elements of those in terms of the perspective that they share. A second letter about Rav Huttner, which I think raises the stakes a little bit if we're going to try to understand who Rav Huttner was, is in Nigros HaKsavim, Simen Pei Vav. There, Rav Huttner is writing a hakdama. He's writing a letter, sorry, more of a skama, a letter to a work that was written on Jewish history. And Rav Huttner shares a yisod kvar nikva hadeya bebeis mitvashenu, an idea which is established in his base. Imagine the of Chaim Berlin, one that is well known there. He says, we know that Chazal tell us Yisrael v'oraisa chadu, the Jewish people and the Torah are one. What does that mean, that the Jewish people and the Torah are one? So that means a couple of different things. Rav Hutner here in this particular letter writes that what it means is there is a certain parallel. There's a similarity to the one, to the way that a person learns Torah, the way a person learns Oraisa, and the way that a person relates to Yisrael. Says Rav Hutner as follows, just as in regards to Torah, Keshem Shebetorah Atzmo Nimsa Ofen Shel Gilei Panim Betorah Shelo Kahalacha, just as in Torah, there's a severe kind of a prohibition to learn Torah, but to learn Torah in an incorrect kind of a way. Shelo Kahalacha. You're learning something and you're doing it in the wrong way and your conclusions are incorrect. That's perceived as being somewhat of an iser and perceived as being very inappropriate. Says Rav Hutner, K'mochin Gam B'Divrei HaYamim Shel Yisrael. So too, when you're learning about Jewish history, when you're learning about figures in Klal Yisrael, Shaper Yitachin Gilei Panim Shelo Kahalacha. It's possible also to speak about figures or speak about kufas in Jewish history and to do it Shelo Kahalacha. Yisrael v'orais achadu, just like in Torah, can be done in an appropriate way, so too when it comes to Jewish history, when it comes speaking about figures or particular tkufas. Says Rav Hutner, anyone that's learned Gemara, or those that have learned certain mesetas in Gemara, know the difference between learning a Gemara with Rashi and a Gemara that doesn't have Rashi on it. You're learning mesetas Nedarim, that's a standard Rashi, or mesetas Nazir. You're learning some of the mesetas that don't have the regular Rashi. It becomes very hard to learn those sugyas. Because without Rashi there, says the Hutner, as our Moreh Derech, without Rashi there to give us those short comments that guide us and how to learn it appropriately, it becomes so hard to learn it the right way. And the Hutner says that that's true with those Gemaras with that Rashi. So the world of Jewish history and the world of learning about certain figures and certain tkufas, each figure, each tkufa, is its own kind of a sugya. And to do that without anything comparable to Rashi, that is something which is so challenging. Rav Hutner says, by the way, that's the real reason why in the world of many of the Batei Medrash, there's less of an emphasis on Jewish history. Rav Hutner says it's not because, and this is a larger conversation, not speaking about now, the Netziv and Rami said that, there's a lot to talk about as far as Jewish perspectives on Jewish history, a very famous small piece written by Professor Yerushalmi entitled Zachor, about the history of, from a historical perspective, how Jews relate to Jewish history. Rav Hutner writes that one of the reasons why we spend less time learning about Jewish history is not because it's something that we don't value, it's because something that we value so much and can't do well. It's because if you're going to do it, it has to be done appropriately, and if you can't do it appropriately, better not to do it. But Rav Hutner adds, and he's writing this haskama to a sefer on Jewish history, he writes, but the same way that there's a parallel between Torah and Yisrael, he says also someone who's learned Torah more, someone who has a certain kind of he's steeped in the world of serious Talmud Torah, that person also at the same time has a better understanding often of elements of that Jewish history, elements of how we look at a person, look at certain tekufas. Yisrael v'orais achad means on the one hand, the achrayus is greater. Elas achok hazeh shel Yisrael v'orais achad hu mit matbeya shel tznei tzadim. There are two sides of it. You may strive to take it with a certain seriousness. All those who are involved in Torah, and they're really there, b'kviyas, in the world of Talmud Torah. So their Torah, it creates, it gives them a certain kind of an insight. So just to introduce it a little bit, we want to speak about Rav Hutner, not less the biography, but more who he was and where his Torah came from and what exactly he did and his impact. But to do that, to understand two things. We're not going to do it in the best way possible. There are limitations in how to do it. We're writing about Rav Hutner in a certain sense without a Peirush Rashi. We're talking about him. There's been a lot written about him, but maybe not as much as we would need for what we're trying to do right now. And we're doing it with a certain sense of achrayus and understanding that, if not done appropriately, that there is a bit of a problem there. And to understand a little bit the complexity, who Rav Hutner was and what made him a little bit unique. I want to just, as far as Rav Hutner, and as we go through some of the letters, we're going to have the opportunity to learn a little bit about about, we'll try to unpackage certain things in terms of, you know, this is an idea which is reminiscent of an idea of Natav Sabak. You know, we'll talk about where certain ideas come from Rav Huttner. But just one last thing to introduce us a little bit to Rav Huttner. Hillel Goldberg has a doctorate. He wrote on Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He lives in Denver. Happens to be a... I had this chus of being in Denver for Shabbos a couple of years ago and to speak with him a little bit. He is an amazing, amazing person. He's editor of the newspaper out there in Denver. He published a sefer, just to give us a little bit as to who he was. He's written a lot of articles in tradition and other journals. He wrote a very important book I have here, Between Berlin and Slobodka. He wrote a very, very important work on Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He published a sefer after something like 18 years of on the Bir HaGvura and Hilchos Mikvaos. When I was there a couple of years ago, he was working on, I think, the Shach and Kali Sveka. And the way that he carries himself, it was unbelievable. I spoke there for Shabbos in the shul, and I was not that good over Shabbos in the shul, and he was so sweet and so nice talking with me. Having me, if I knew he was in the shul, I think I would have spoken about things very far away from his area of expertise. Just that's a little bit of a move. But he was really wonderful. He writes here about Rav Huttner. So first he quotes a Talmud of Rav Huttner. Not that any of us could write it, but if each major disciple of the Rashiva were to write a book about him, each would write a different book. Rav Huttner was a very complex figure with a lot of different sides. He quotes here that Rav Huttner once shared autobiographically a Medrash Adam HaRishon, which he referred to in a certain sense about himself, and it'll be a very important thing, a piece of Rav Huttner. The Medrash says that Adam HaRishon was created from the Adama, and the Medrash says that the dirt that he was created from, was taken from all different areas of the world. It was taken a little bit here, a little bit there, and it was all brought together to create Adam HaRishon. Rav Huttner once said that I too am a gathering point from Poland, from Lithuania, from Riga, from Germany, from Eretz Yisrael, and from the United States. Rav Huttner was someone who lived in a lot of different places, and Rav Huttner was someone that drew from a lot of different places. He was, as far as his family, I'm going to try to talk today about three or four just different areas where Rav Huttner was and those influences. I'm going to focus a bit more on one or two of them to give us some more insight. But let's start with like this. Rav Huttner once said, in source number five, they quote a line from Rav Huttner. The line Rav Huttner said was, Koma Yisojali, Hakoma Harishona. If I was compared to a building, Rav Huttner said, my foundation would be from the altar of Slobodka. He said the higher level would come from the world of Rav Kook. We spoke last week how Rav Kook, Rav Huttner later in life, he evolved a little bit, as we'll point out in a second. Dr. Yaakov Ellman, who's a Talmud of Rav Huttner and a professor in YU, published an article that came out, I think, last week on the thought of Rav Huttner, where he writes, an earlier draft came out last year, but the article itself came out last week. He writes that if he was just deepening that mashal, so the level below the altar of Slobodka would come from Polish Chassidus, and the level below that would come from the Maharal. Rav Huttner drew from a lot of different places. Let me just point out that, again, it's a lot of different places. It also happens to be, as Rav Lichtenstein pointed out, it's on the sheet here, is a letter that Rav Lichtenstein wrote to Jewish Action. I am indebted to a good friend, Nachum Butler, for sending me this letter. Or is from 2002, he wrote a letter. We do not have Rav Lichtenstein's Hesped for Rav Huttner. That has never been published. What we do, at least to my knowledge, but the knowledge of people that can speak more authoritatively about that. And one of the things that Rav Lichtenstein pointed out about Rav Huttner, while he drew from other places, he also did evolve a little bit over time. So we're going to speak about some different influences. But Rav Huttner, over his life, there were certain shifts. One of the more famous shifts of Rav Huttner relates to Rav Kook, as is somewhat well known. Rav Huttner, for many years, had a picture up in his sukkah, a picture of Rav Kook. Later in life, that picture came down, and there's a lot to talk about as far as why exactly that happened. But he got a little bit close to some of Rebbe's reference last week, later in life. And Rav Huttner was someone who did evolve a little bit. But we're going to speak a little bit today about some of his influences. Let's start like this, as far as who exactly Rav Huttner was. The first thing to understand about Rav Huttner, the first thing to understand is that Rav Huttner is also a classic, he's a lamdin. Rav Huttner is a Rosh Hashiva. He is someone who gave regular shiurim, and they are serious lamdas. He is someone that Torah Sanazir, his first sefer, his book we last, and Hilchos Naziras, something that was published when he was in his early to mid 20s. He published that sefer with haskamas from many of the Gedolei Hador. And Rav Huttner had correspondence with some others, and he was someone who was, in many ways, a classic Lamdin, and in many ways, in the brisker Mahalach of Limud. He was hired, when he was younger, he taught Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. So he had a cash, that's why Rav Huttner brought Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, the Rav's brother, brought him in to be a Rebbe in Chaim Berlin at one point also. So Rav Huttner is a regular Lamdin. Rav Huttner, though, his main area of impact comes from the Sfarim of Pacha Yitzchak. Those Sfarim are on the Moedim, and they are limited. They're really in what Rav Huttner referred to as Hilchos Deos, Vechovas Halavavos, the world of Agadata. But one of the things that Rav Huttner did, and he said apparently about himself, as is in source number 8, Rav Shayo Steinberger, who's a Rav in Yerushalayim, pointed out, Rav Huttner said that one of the things he's trying to do in Machshava, and you get this feel if you're, what you're familiar with Lamdas, was to take some of Rav Chaim's contributions in the world of Lamdas and to apply those to the world of Machshava. We spoke about how the structure of Pacha Yitzchak parallels in many ways the structure of a Shir Klali, the Kashas, and then the Mahalach, and answering all the Kashas, but the content, the way he was doing it, developing certain conceptual categories. That's why a lot of Lamda, if you're a Lamdan, you open up Pacha Yitzchak, I think one appreciates a lot what Rav Huttner is doing and becomes sensitive to it. That's one thing as Akdama. But the main influence of Rav Huttner, who we refer to as its foundation, is the Altar of Slobodka. And I think we have to understand a little bit who the Altar was to get who Rav Huttner was. Rav Huttner, the first influence of Rav Huttner is a Lamdan. He comes from a world of Lithuania. He comes from a place of classical commentator in that way. Second is the Altar of Slobodka. To understand who the Altar was, Rav Huttner at the age of 15 goes to learn in Slobodka. Slobodka is a yeshiva with two main figures. There is a Rosh Yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva Slobodka of Moshe Mordechai Epstein, author of Levush Mordechai. We quoted Levush Mordechai when we learned about Metzia, a very important Lamdin. But the main figure in Slobodka is the Altar of Slobodka. The Altar of Slobodka, to understand who else is in Slobodka at the time, who the Talmidim of Slobodka were, Rav Aaron Kuller, Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Ruderman. So many of the Gedolim of the last generation in America are products of Slobodka. The Altar is a somewhat mysterious figure. We don't know that much about the Altar, and not that much is published from his own Torah. The Sefer Or HaTzafun is written up, three chalakim, these are all three in this one volume, of the Altar's, some of his sichos and ma'amarim. We don't know that much about him. There's a lot of, he didn't speak that much, he didn't give Gemara Shirim. There's some debate, even among some of his Talmidim, how much he's a Bucky in Shas and Poskim, he's less of a, we don't know that much about him. Who was the Altar? The Altar is Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel. Rav Nassim Tzvi from Mir is a descendant of. Rav Nassim Tzvi Finkel is the Altar of Slobodka. Who is he and what made him unique? He's third generation Bali Musar. Bishol Salanter, the founder, whatever that means, of the Musar movement, emphasized a lot, and we spoke about Rabbi Yisrael, I think, in the beginning, Elulzman, last year a little bit. Rabbi Yisrael was someone who was emphasizing a lot a certain kind of avodas hamidos with a certain kind of psychological insight. Who are people and what helps them grow and how do we move them? A very unique and particular kind of an avoda, a base hamusar. Musar Seder, if you're a Yisrael Salanter in that time, is not going to be learned in the base medrash the way that we learn it. Musar Seder for Yisrael looks very, very different than what we're familiar with. Musar Seder was done in the Beis HaMusar in a different place. The way it was done was not really learning Musar Sfarim. What they would do by Yisrael Salanter, and this is going to be a little bit strange for some of us, is they would find a particular Maimer Chazal, Kol HaKoes Ki'ilu Ovei Avodah Zarah, and they would just sort of like meditate and repeat that same line over and over again as a way of sort of internalizing it. Pretty wild stuff. And Rabbi Yisrael's learning, he's functioning in a world where there's no real Musar Seder. And we spoke last year in some of the Mesiel Shiurim in the beginning about some of the opposition to the Musar movement of what's going on in the world of Velaz and Rav Chaim Soloveitchik very famously saying, we don't need it here. Musar is great for people that are sick. But Baruch Hashem and Velaz, we aren't sick and we don't need Musar. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter arguing, you know, it's probably important for everyone and there are sick people there and we do have what to work on. But in the third generation of the Bali Musar, you find a fascinating split. And just like in Hasidus and in really all movements, they're always evolving a little bit. Third generation, we have a break a little bit in the Musar movement between the world of Slabatka and the world of Nevardak. Now, we are sometimes familiar with Slabatka, phrases like godless Adam. Nevardak, phrases like shiftless Adam. I want to describe a little bit for who the altar was. It'll give us context to understand what is going on in Slabatka, and it will give us a lot of insight into who Rav Huttner really was. The sentence is as follows. When we speak about the altar, and speaking about godless Adam, man is great. What exactly does that mean? I want to just read from you a little bit from one of the ma'amarim of the altar of Slabatka. This is, I think, standard and typical of his kind of a Torah. The topic here is Erech Chayi Ha'adam, the value of a person's life. It's in Chelek Gimel. It is on page Samech. I apologize, it's not on the Marmar Kol Moshi. Ein L'tayer B'charad Enosh Erech Rega Echad Shel Chayi Ben Adam. You can't understand and you can't fathom how great the light of a single moment is. How much a person can accomplish in just one moment of his life. He brings a raya from Adam HaRishon. How so much is created for Adam HaRishon pre the chait. It's all there for man. The whole cosmos, all that's there is all there so that a figure like Adam HaRishon can just experience that and serve his role. He knows when Yadagash Barakh Shabosa Yom Shivra Adam. The Rabban Shalom knew that the same day that he created Adam HaRishon, he bases a lot of his sikhos on Ma'amari Chazal. But the Rabban Shalom knew the same day Chazal tells that Adam was going to be created, he was going to sin. Nevertheless, he still created a world pre-chait, an entire world of existence, all there for Adam to have just for those few moments. And he says, "B'mida kazo, so too." Uveshir hazeh yis laharich chayikol adam adam v'chol hadoros. In each generation, people are on a madriga where we can't fathom what they could accomplish. And he quotes from different ma'amari chazal. Hari mikan kama erech yis larega chayikol ben adam. Shem rak motzim bahem ezin nekuda tova shehi. It almost sounds like a little bit like Rabbi Nachman, it's in Reish Pei Beis in Likutei Moharan. If you can find that one small spark of good in a person, Av she'ena ela chelek milyoni mishal chova, even if there are millions, they're divided of a person, there are million sections of him that are negative, that are bad, but you have one good part, one good nekuda, says the author, kedoyim heim achayim ha'ele, that his life, it's worth it. That can uplift a person. It can save him from Gehenna. It can transform him and make him worthy of things. When the altar speaks about godless Adam, he has a couple of things in mind. One, the sheer potential and value of a person. The shift, part two, of a lot of the thought of the altar becomes talking a lot more about people. That becomes the subject of a lot of his discussion. There are people who believe that man is great, but it doesn't become the dominant part of their sichos and ma'amarim. When you look, and you see this particular in many of the letters of Rav Huttner, the emphasis is on people and less on sort of other elements of Torah to uplift and to highlight how great they are. The other element you find in the writings of the altar, and I believe also you see elements of in Rav Huttner, is an optimistic approach towards people. It doesn't mean that you are in denial about the fact we spoke about last week, that there can be things that need to be better. As you pointed out last week, the tochacha of Rav Huttner is not a tochacha, a rebuke that is given because someone is low. It's a rebuke that's given because you are great, and I know that you could be even higher. And that's sort of an optimistic element. That's an optimistic element that takes you through a couple just fascinating places. The way the author of Slabatka, Benjamin Brown wrote an article, it's a great book, Sefer Yeshivos Ubatei Midrashos, on history of different yeshivas. There's an article here by Benjamin Brown on the godless Adam in Slabatka and subsequent generations of the Baalei Musar. It goes akedei kach. Talk about the Yetzer Hara, and this you do have letters of Rav Huttner. Some is also Rav Tzadok, we'll speak about it in a second. But you have, in Slabatka, Yetzer Hara, so Yetzer Hara is spoken about differently in Rav Yisrael Salanter in some of his letters. Rav Yisrael talks a lot about Yetzer Hara, it's Hara Misiel Shasharim, as is terrible. Even the way Yetzer Hara is spoken about has a certain positive kind of a twist. the Yetzer Hara, what it does as far as giving us certain potential. I'm not talking about it for now. Maybe we'll speak about it a different week, but it's a very positive, optimistic kind of an approach. The shmooze becomes more important. Rav Lichtenstein, in his letter about Rav Huttner, writes that if you were assessing the impact of Rav Huttner was a lamdin, and no one questions that. But if you were looking at the way that Rav Huttner chose to do this, to impact, Rav Huttner's impact looks much more like the altar of Slabodka, and a little bit less like the Vish Mordechai, like of Moshe Mordechai Epstein. A lot of his impact is less in the lumdus which is set over, but more in the Talmidim that he built, in his world of Machshava and his unique contributions there. The altar of Sabaka, he said that is his foundation. He was in Sabaka for about 8 years. He then went by the altar. He then went to Chevron in the Sabaka branch in Chevron. We spoke about last week how he just missed the Chevron massacre. Rav Huttner, the altar, definitely a major, major influence on him. Rav Huttner also was very much influenced by the thought of Rav Tzadok and Polish Hasidus. His uncle is a Kotzker Chassid. His uncle is a Kotzker Chassid, and it was known, Talmidim Rav Huttner say, it was known that a lot of his Torah is based on ideas in Rav Tzadok. They say there's only one place in his letters, and I think they say it's the only place in his writings, where Rav Huttner quotes Rav Tzadok explicitly, and that's Dafka about a small point in the world of in the history of Kabbalah, how the only Torah from the Ari that you could take is a Torah that comes through Chaim Vital, but the Ramami Pano has certain things, and it's a Rav Tzadok that's a little bit of an aside, but he wasn't quoting Rav Tzadok so much, but it's clear that he was influenced, and this is the Talmidim say it was known at that time in Chaim Berlin that Rav Tzadok was a major influence. We spoke about Rav Tzadok last year in Kayetzman. We're learning the Tikkat Tzadik, the thought of Rav Tzadok, and we will hopefully, as we go through, be able to speak a little bit more about the thought of Rav Tzadok. So we've spoken about Rav Huttner as a lamdin, Rav Huttner as a talmud of the altar of Slabodka, Rav Huttner as someone who was very much influenced by elements post Chassidus. Later in Rav Huttner's life, to get just a little bit of a handle on this, Rav Huttner dressed more like a Chassidus rabbi. You see pictures of him. He's wearing a shtreimel and wearing more of a bekesha. His ma'amarim, this is a Slabodka influence and a Chassidus, both of them. The way that he would give over, it was much more like a tish. When anyone ever here, has anyone ever read Pachad Yitzchak on Purim by his son-in-law? Have you ever seen anyone over there? So it's a little bit more like a tish by Rav Huttner. What does that mean? It was more like a tish. So Rav Huttner's there in the front. There are nigunim that are going to be taking place at times, and it has a certain kind. It's not like a regular shmooze that you often see. The most shmooze, everybody comes in front of the room and he's giving that shmooze. It's much more like a tish. Has much more of that kind of environment, and it was dafka a lot of time around the yamim nerun, and that's who Rav Huttner. That's who Rav Huttner was. We will also speak about, as far as Rav Huttner, the influence. We'll speak a little bit in some of the letters. You see elements of the influence of Rav Kook, and how exactly Rav Kook impacted him. Let me say what we've done so far, and then where we're going. We had a bit of a hakdamas in the letters of Rav Huttner, how you speak about Gedolim, how you speak about great people, how you try to understand who they really were, how they evolved, and where they come from, the challenge in doing so in an improper way. We tried to point out that, as Rav Huttner pointed out, Adam Harishon, so Adam comes, the dirt's coming from everywhere. The same thing is true, Rav Huttner said about himself. There's a little bit of Poland, a little bit of the Polish Chassidus, a little bit of Lithuania, the world of the Altar of Sabaka, the world of classical Lumdus, the world of Eretz Yisrael, and the world of Rav Kook, the world of America, where he gets a little bit close to Satmar. He had it for a while, a Chavrus with Babis Rebbe, then they had a bit of a split. He had a catch with those people. He spent some time in Berlin. Rav Huttner was in Berlin. Rav Huttner, in the world of Twins Out, which is a fascinating thing, Rav Huttner is a figure that gets spoken about a lot in academic circles. A lot of academics fascinated by Rav Huttner. Last summer, spent some time reading through. There was the person is a chashuv guy. He wrote an article in Hamayan, which is Shaul Bim's journal. He wrote an article about Rav Huttner, about the Maharal and Shuva and Rav Huttner. He is, I forget his name, his doctorate was on Tshuva and the thought of Rav Huttner. It was done very, very nicely, at least the sections that I went through. A lot of academics, this is interesting, and Rav Huttner had read one of the early articles that was about him by someone who's a bit of an academic and approved of it, that Dr. Ellman points out in source number 7. But there are parallels between Rav Huttner and secular philosophers or non-Orthodox philosophers from that era, and there's a lot to talk about. We're not going to speak about that much those influences. I am not so familiar with them. But there's just to point out, Rav Huttner spent some time in Berlin. That was when he spent some time. The Rav was in Berlin then, and Lubavitch Rebbe's in Berlin then. That was a place of there's a lot going on then. And some other people also. And Rav Huttner definitely had a connection to it. One of the points that they often point out when writing about Rav Huttner is something which I think is important, and this will shift to our discussion of the impact of Rav Huttner and why Rav Huttner really, why Rav Huttner matters so much. And we'll try and point out a couple of things. One. Often, Hillel Goldberg has this point, Dr. Ellman has this point also. When you have people who draw from a lot of different sources, they can become very confused. And it can become, their thought can be very contradictory. And you can look at them and you can say, you know, you take a little bit of here and a little bit of there and you walk out with very, very little. I had that conversation sometimes with people. I was talking to someone in the shiur even recently who's very into Machshava. So I was trying to make the point that if a person wants to be successful in the world of Machshava, so having a bunch of smaller chavrusas in different svarim is often not as helpful as having, you know, right now I'm working primarily on one sefer or one person or two people, and I'm trying to tackle that and let me get that done well and then go somewhere else. Just like in the world of Lamdas, if we weren't learning Bav Metzia, but we were learning the Shomrim Sugyas, but we were learning one day a Shomer Sugya, and one day a Ribbis Sugya, and one day we were thinking about Metzia, and one day a Yeyer Sugya, we'd end up being a little bit more all over the place, and sometimes a bit of a focus is something which can be very, very helpful. What you find in Rav Huttner, and this is a fascinating thing, is you find a person who drew from a lot of different sources, but you don't even find that much tension with him. It was a certain kind of synthesis that you find in the thought of Rav Huttner. You find someone, and this Hillel Goldberg points out, and it's a strange way of saying it, because he points out that much as Rav Huttner, you know, in the letter writes about how, speak about the inner struggles, Rav Huttner's letters, we have his letters from when he was very young, writing in Slobodka, he's in his teens and we have his letters. He was already there, a bit of a gavra. What Rav Huttner did was he always was who he was, and he incorporated and learned from others, but being who he was, it always has the unique kind of a Rav Huttner style. The unique kind of a his interpretation of it, but it's always coming, you know, in him. And he's not someone who, when he pulls from different places, it doesn't. You don't feel the contradictions when you learn the Torah of Huttner. You feel the unity when you learn the Torah of Rav Huttner. In many ways, it's an idea of the Maharal. The Maharal's idea based on the Gemara Maseches Shabbos. That part of it in the door of Geula and the generation. There's a Geula that exists. This is another kind of a Oraisa v'Yisrael Chadu. There's a geula that exists in regards to Klal Yisrael, a certain kind of a redemption. There's a geula that exists also in regards to Torah. And just as the Maharal, in a slightly different way than I'm saying it right now, just as the Maharal understands, just as there's a geula that takes place with a uva ov de meretz asher v'nidachim, that we're pulling in people. We're pulling people in from all over the place. So too in Torah, there's a certain kind of a redemptive Torah. A certain kind of Torah, an element that Rav Kook writes about in letters also, is a Torah that comes from pulling from multiple sources. A Torah that comes from taking there, but redeeming it and making it one. And in many ways, that is who Rav Huttner, that's who he is. And it's a Torah relevant to our generation. So point number one, why Rav Huttner's impact, why he's important. Rav Huttner is someone who draws from a lot of different sources. Some sources that we're more familiar with, some we're less familiar with, and he presents a system of thought as to how a person can draw from that and not experience the tension, but experience a certain kind of unity. The second reason why Rav Huttner is very important is that Rav Huttner, of people within a certain worldview of the last generation, he's the one, Rav Moshe Feinstein, what we know Rav Moshe at primarily, they're all Lamdanim, but Rav Moshe's primary impact, for better or for worse, is in the world of and where Zocha to be Mekabel is less in the world of Lamdas, it's more in Igros Moshe, Moshe's Pesachim. Moshe as the Posek is the one that we're most familiar with. Rav Huttner is in the world of Machshava. That's his Iker area of impact. Rav Huttner as the main person from that door in America, and as the vast majority of us, you know, are coming from there. Rav Huttner is the one who spoke a lot in terms of machshava, and he spoke a lot about important issues. Rav Huttner is the one that if you're talking about how you're going to relate to the Holocaust, so Rav Huttner has a very well-known discussion as to how you relate to the Holocaust, how do you relate to Gedolim and the Holocaust, that it generated a lot of discussion. But Rav Huttner is a person who wrote about things that Rav Moshe is not writing about. And not everyone's writing about these issues the same way. And Rav Huttner becomes a primary source for so many issues. You see that in particular, as we quoted last week, in Rav Huttner's letters. Your son David, his son-in-law, in the Hakdama to the Igros, points this out. That letters become the way for us to be exposed to great thinkers, not just through their Torah, but the way that their Torah was supposed to impact this world. Rav Huttner isn't just writing about, I can read Pacha Yitzchak, and I can see what he thought the Ikra Avoda of Purim is, and that's great and important. But when you see the way that he writes to his students about the way they should be living their lives, the way he deals with their struggles, you see in Rav Huttner, not just a Baal Machshava, maybe this is the third point, not just Rav Huttner as far as drawing different places, not just Rav Huttner as far as Baal Machshava, but three, Rav Huttner, the Baal Machshava, who dealt with real life issues, and we have the ability to learn to see how he dealt with those issues. Rav Huttner is the one, we know that the broadly double life letter many of us are familiar with. We'll start to speak about it, contextualize. We'll speak about the Rav and broad life, double life. We'll try and, you know, broaden the broad life letter. We will, but one of the things that, what's that letter about? It's that a Talmud from the yeshiva goes out to work and is struggling a little bit. To see how Rav Huttner writes to that person is important. You something that you have tshuvas about. So, you know, should I be leaving now? Not to see the way that Rav Huttner gives chizuk, the way that Rav Huttner talks to a person who's struggling at Avodas Hashem in a different letter, the first one we quoted on the sheet. You learn so much about it. It serves as a basis, not just in the world of Musar, to give you like a Rabbi Saul Salanter for channeling the altar a little bit. There are a lot of Musar Sfarim. But a person can learn Mesiyas Yesharim and it won't necessarily impact their Avodas Hashem at all. You can learn Mesiyas Yesharim as how the Ramchal learned the Sugya of Midos. And we happen to, that's a little bit how we learned Mesiyas Yesharim last year and in this year. But you can also learn Musar, and what Rabbi Saul Salanter was trying to get at, and what you see in some of the letters of Rav Huttner is how your limud is supposed to transform the way that you live. And how your learning is supposed to be the kind of learning that is a source of strength, a source of chizuk in different times. It's a way of challenging a person. All that is the thought of Rav Huttner. What we're going to try to do, we spoke last week, and this is why the last week's shiur was very important, Rav Huttner and Rebbe Talmud relationships. Rav Huttner understood the job of the Rebbe is to give over his Torah, but not in an external way. Remember the mashal of the nursing mother. To give over the Torah that was who he was. To give over elements of his essence to his Talmidim. Rav Huttner doing that, when you understand his essence, you understand what exactly we're trying to get. When you understand that Rav Huttner's essence was what was pulled from Poland, Lithuania, and Germany. Pulled from America and pulled from Eretz Yisrael. See the way he speaks about Eretz Yisrael. When you get who Rav Huttner was, the breadth, the depth, and the synthesis, who Rav Huttner was and what he represented, and how that is what he wanted to give over to his Talmidim, you experience a different way. I would argue the notion of a broad life, how integrating it all into one piece. When you know who Rav Huttner was, you can. If you don't know it, you say Rav Huttner, yeah, he learned in yeshiva this whole time, each of them talk about broad life. You see Rav Huttner was someone who pulled from so many different contradictory places into one, and who he was, you have a good handle on who the figure of Rav Huttner was. Not just one of the great Gedolim and one of the great Lamdan, one of the great Baalei Machshava, but someone who serves as a person who is so insightful, who is able to understand people and what they need and who they are. Someone who impacted so many different worlds and so many important figures. Be'ez Hashem, in a couple of weeks, we'll be going through some of these letters of Rav Huttner, and we should be zochet to understand it properly within the context of his thought and how it can impact us. Shkayach, guys.